TJ Perkins making his debut at this pay-per-view we're going to talk about. Welcome to Blah Blah Wrestling. It's Benny with you. We're talking Clash of Champions and what it was, because it was not a very good pay-per-view in a lot of our minds. I graded it as a B, but we'll get into that in a second. But anyway, alongside me, as always, is Sean.
Hello.
Steven.
Yo, yo.
And Jobo.
Hey.
So, guys, let's talk about Clash of Champions. I don't really know where to start, aside from going right into the pre-show, but this felt so lackluster. I mean, I feel like, in a way, we were spoiled because of Backlash. Backlash was a very good pay-per-view.
Very good episode of SmackDown. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. But I felt like Backlash kind of played what it was very well, which is it's not a Survivor Series. It's a branded pay-per-view, and it felt right. A lot of it felt right. This felt very weird. Like I mentioned it in my review on Facebook for those of you who care to look at it. It felt like a lot of matches were out of place. It felt like we really didn't have opportunities to actually get results, and everything kind of felt like, oh, they're going to do this just to continue whatever they're on, but it doesn't look like it's going anywhere. It just looks like they're just trying to go to the next pay-per-view versus Backlash, which stories were progressing there. This didn't really feel like stories were progressing here, but before we get into things, what did we think of Clash of Champions? I'm going to start with Steve on this one. Steve, what did you think of Clash of Champions?
I really didn't enjoy it, to be honest. I was not a huge fan. It was all right, but I mean, as compared to the Backlash, I didn't enjoy that much. Like, I watched it, but it was all right.
Yeah, like I said, I felt like we were kind of spoiled with Backlash. Sean, what did you think of COC?
Oh, you mean cock? Well, I'm not a big fan. But if we're talking about the pay-per-view, I thought it was just a very... It was a pretty good episode of Raw. That's what it felt like. It wasn't anything that felt special. Like normally in most pay-per-views, like even SummerSlam, feels special, and I didn't really feel much was very special in the show.
It's interesting you brought up an episode of Raw, because the episode of Raw that followed this was abysmal, which kind of saved the pay-per-view in a way. But we'll go to Jobo, and then we'll get into the pay-per-view. Jobo, what'd you think?
I thought it was all right. You know, it's pretty boring in my opinion. Like the fact that nothing happened, like nothing changed. It just was an extension of things we've seen for weeks.
Oh, and things were probably seen
for a while. And, channel. Once I changed the channel, but I thought it was a forgettable pay-per-view, and you know.
Yes, this definitely didn't feel special. You're right, Jobo. All right, let's start with the pre-show match. We get a weird squash match here to start off the pre-show. Lasted about 5 minutes. Nia Jax versus Alicia Fox. So you want to bother talking about this? It's just a squash match.
I actually didn't watch the pre-show this week.
Well, Nia has a new botched finish, so that's cool. She did a Samoan drop now, I guess.
Yes, she has a new finish. I don't...
That's right.
She's not like most girls.
Steve, I'm going to get you that t-shirt. I'm not like most girls.
I'll wear the hell out of that. Because it's true for me, too. I'm not. I have a beard, and I don't have a vagina.
Yeah.
I'm already qualified.
I don't know how I feel about the pre-show, because again, my argument before is that I feel like if they want to make the pre-show relevant or to make us watch it, they need to put something on there to make us watch it, and this definitely was
not. I don't think the pre-show needs like a big five-star match on it.
No, but it needs something.
I didn't really have a problem with it being on the pre-show. I mean, it's not great. It wasn't a great match, but it's a pre-show match. It's not like it's anything to really be upset about, you know?
Well, I also said, like, what happened? Like, they had a couple other potential matches set up here. They had, what is it? Obviously, they weren't going to do Titus O'Neil versus Darren.
Oh, what, do you want to see Enzo and Kaz against the Shining Stars? I didn't.
Maybe just to get some laughs. I don't know. Something.
Laughs from Nia Jax.
That's a pretty cold burn there, Sean. But no, I agree with you. again, it is the pre-show, but I feel like every now and then they should put something there to kind of make us tune in a little early to watch, but I don't know. I mean,
yeah, and then the counter argument is, like, I forget, it may have been Hell in a Cell last year, I don't remember which show it was, but Sasha and Becky had a match, which was like, they were kicking out of finishers and, like, all that stuff on the pre-show. It's like, that's too much. It's like, you need to find a middle ground here. And I'm not opposed to having these type of matches on the pre-show either.
No, I'm not opposed to it either. But, like, you could put, like, a low or mid-card storyline into the pre-show. Like, they could have done, granted, it basically fell like the microphone out of Titus O'Neil's hands. But O'Neil versus Young, they could have put that on the pre-show just to give us something to see. But, like, I agree with you. I don't want to see Jericho versus Sami Zayn. I don't want to see the U.S. title. I don't want to see the tag titles on the pre-show. But I do want to see something that's, like, going to build to something. Like, maybe Darren Young down the road would have gotten a title shot at the United States title. I don't know. But that's long gone. But anyway, all right. Any final comments before we move on to the opening match?
No.
I'm not like most.
No.
All right. Let's start with the opening match. They decide to put the tag titles on the line here, New Day versus the Club. I was excited for this. I thought, oh, great. They're a title change. Woo, this is going to be fantastic. And it started out that way. Luke Gallows goes over, takes out Big E, takes out Xavier, and just Kofi and Anderson. And it's they're going 2-on-1 for a while, and they're really wearing down Kofi. And then New Day comes back and makes another, I don't want to call it a John Cena comeback, but it kind of felt that way. Comes back and ends up winning the match thanks to the horn. Okay, so if we're going to go and say that Bray Wyatt is basically dead, the Club is getting to that point. I wouldn't go that far.
They haven't had years of bad booking
behind them.
Yeah, but they came in and they haven't been booked exactly great. Like they were supposed to come in and be this tough, kick-ass tag team, and so far they have been Dr. Gallows and Dr. Anderson, and it's stupid.
I think the problem is that they're on Raw. I think if they were on SmackDown, they could still be with AJ, and they'd probably be the tag champions right now.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
I agree, but. Like, I guess this could be another potential, like, they need to be moved to SmackDown, which I'm starting to say more and more about the entire Raw roster. It's like, oh, they'd probably be better off on SmackDown. Oh, they'd probably be better off on SmackDown. But I just don't.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Raw needs top heel tag teams. But once you get past Anderson Gallows, who's your top heel tag team?
Shining Stars?
Oh, God.
Ugh.
Oh, my God. Jobo, you're right. Shining Stars. And I don't know what they're going to... Because it looks so... You know what? Okay, before we go into what the tag division looks like, I'm going to go to Jobo. What did you think of this match?
It was all right. I'm not the biggest Gallows and Anderson fans, but I do think that, you know, they had the opportunity to, you know... Final, you know, to give it to them, and especially I think, you know, where they're kind of like floundering right now with like those doctor gimmicks and the old day stuff, you know, the being like the tag team champions could really help them. Kind of like from what I've gathered, it kind of helped the New Day, but you know, I think they kind of missed out on an opportunity. And then I thought, okay, well, maybe, you know, it's the pay per view, and then the New Day is going to make it to day 400, and then. You know, the Gallows and Anderson have the rematch, and they'll drop the titles on Raw. But no, that wasn't the case either. And I don't know what they're doing with them. And I want to like them, but I just feel like there was a missed opportunity there.
And Steve, what did you think of the opening match?
I mean, it was frustrating. Like, I'm actually a pretty big Gallows and Anderson fan, and just to see how they're being treated and the stuff they're being given, it's just like, man, this isn't these guys. These guys are supposed to be like wrecking ball powerhouse team, and they're getting nothing. Like the whole Doctors thing, it was funny, but I was like, this just like they can be funny guys, but this isn't what they need right now.
And,
it's hard to take them seriously.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna add. It's like there's a level of comedy you can do when you're supposed to work a tough guy angle. Or a tough guy gimmick, I should say. They kind of felt cartoony, and I think Sean, you'll agree, is like they that doctor gimmick definitely felt more cartoony.
That in the old day segment.
That was bad. Booking aside, they should probably have the titles by now. I mean, it's all about momentum. They were a hot gimmick or they were a hot team. And now it's just kind of like, okay, well, why do I care about them if they're just going to lose?
And they are suffering from the fact that, and it's pretty clear that they want the New Day to get to the Demolition record. So,
which is 478.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. I question giving them all these title shots so early when realistically they should be the ones that are ending the title streak and not being, you know, just on the beaten path to the record.
Yeah. And you know, we'll kind of change direction here and talk about that record. It's 478 days. So right now I believe it's at what? 400 as of Raw. It was 400 or 401.
It was at 400. So what would that be, like 402 today?
Yes. Whatever. No, it'd be
403.
It'd be like 405. Cause, we're recording this on a Thursday. It's gonna be released on a Friday. So it'd be like 405, but that aside, that puts them, I believe I'm doing the math correctly, into December. And right now, it looks like the December pay-per-view is going to be called Roadblock or whatever it is. That's a ways you have to go. I mean, you're working through Hell in a Cell and Survivor Series, I believe, as well. Like, that's a long way to go with the New Day. So my question to you guys is... The New Day kind of seems like they're running out of gas a little bit. I don't want to dog them too much here, but they are starting to kind of like, okay, it's time to wrap this thing
up. Shake our booties.
Yes, kind of work them into a different role and kind of take the titles off of them and put it onto someone else. Because the moment that anyone wins those tag titles, it's going to launch them. You ended the streak. You're launching that tag team into the stratosphere. Where do we stand in the New Day? Like, what's our opinion right now, the New Day? And do you guys think they'll be able to work this and keep this fresh until 480?
If they have challengers, they can. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what they're doing with Sheamus and Cesaro, but
we'll get to that. We'll get to that later. That's a dumpster fire.
But
we have to talk about.
I mean, a champion is only as hot as their challengers. Yeah. That's, mm-hmm. I mean, you look at Asuka right now, like she's not really all that hot right now because there's no one to challenge her. And I feel like part of the problem with the New Day, and I don't think they're getting old, but I feel like they don't have a credible threat. They've killed Anderson and Gallows many times. They've beat even non-title matches. They've beaten them multiple times. There's no real team unless you do the Enzo and Cass thing that can really challenge them. And I'm curious as to how they're going to get to this point and keep the titles. Cause clearly that seems like what they're doing.
Well, I would have to, you took the words right out of my mouth, Sean, that Enzo and Cass are like the only viable ones. Other than that, you got the Shining Stars, the Golden Truth.
Oh yeah.
Like that's about it. And you know, Gallows and Anderson, there's only so much you can do with them. And so I guess Enzo and Cass are this Cesaro Sheamus team. Like,
you know what they need to do? And I know it kind of screws up with their cruiserweight division, but they need to bring some of the cruiserweight guys and put them in tag teams. That way you can pad out a little bit.
Yes. Like I think before we get to Steve here, they did that a little bit on Raw. They had, what is it? Gulak and
Lindsay Dorado, but
Dorado, team up. But
it was a cruiserweight match, though. Like, yes. I'm saying, have them be out of the division.
Which they're apparently like bringing up people because they did Gulak and Tony Nese, mm-hmm. and they weren't as a part of the original announcements. But last I checked on the WWE website, the roster section with all the roster, they're on there. So like, there's probably going to be more people that they're going to use that did sign contracts.
There are,
with them.
There's cruiserweights that we haven't seen yet. That
Tozawa and Gallagher too.
And eventually they're going to have to bring up Ciampa and Gargano.
Yeah, but so it really feels like they're finally going to give them the tag titles, though. So I wouldn't say that just yet.
Well, then you get the Revival, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe, I don't know.
Say yeah.
Whatever they're called.
Not the brothers, or what are they called? The authors of pain.
Oh, fuck you,
Sean.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. This is the wrong show.
You have a couple things to bleep out, but anyway,
I forgot. I got really angry. What are they gonna do? A side Russian leg sweep into their clothesline finish? That's worse than any Nia Jax botch finisher.
For two guys that are so big, that is a terrible finish.
And they have a better finish. They do it in some of the matches. They power bomb into each other.
Yeah.
Just do that.
That sounded really dirty.
Well, the two guys. They power bomb the two guys into each other.
Danny, I'm gonna power bomb into you.
Yes. Steve, what did you think? Do you think the New Day is? Do you think it's getting old a little bit?
I mean, personally, I don't love them as much as I used to. Mm-hmm. And I've also noticed, like in the crowd, you can hear the murmurs of dissent starting. Like when the New Day comes out, so if you can hear the murmurs of the boos starting to get a little louder each time.
I don't think we're gonna get to the point where people are gonna start chanting like New Day, like what they were doing before.
I don't think we're gonna get that again, but their reception isn't as warm as it used to be.
No.
But yeah, I don't know. And I mean, everything you guys have said, you've just hit the nail on the head. Like without viable competition, they seem like this juggernaut that has nothing nothing in front of them. So it gets really stale really fast, and it's unfortunate.
And that's one of the obstacles when you're talking about the tag team division. That's one of the big obstacles because, you know, with your singles division, you can work guys up the card. There's other titles for them to win. And NXT, you know when there's viable competition there. But with the tag division, it's so difficult sometimes to get a tag team over because you're dealing with having to get two guys over, sometimes three guys over, versus just one guy over. Like, it's easy for a Brian Kendrick to get over with the fans. Not necessarily is it going to be easy for a Brian Kendrick and someone else together to get over. And
Paul London?
Yes. Yes, going way back when. All right, so speaking of Brian Kendrick, let's... Oh, any final thoughts on this, or do you want to move to the next match?
I think we said everything.
All right, let's move. We'll talk a little more about the tag division when we get to Cesaro and Sheamus. Right now, we got to get to the debut of TJ Perkins and Brian Kendrick, WWE Cruiserweight Championship match. I really liked this match. It wasn't. If people are going to sit here and they're listening to this and they haven't seen Clash of Champions yet, this is not the Cruiserweight match that you were going to get in 2005 or 2006. This is not that kind of match. I think there were barely any flips. It was more like good technical wrestling. Kendrick is great. TJ Perkins is really good. We have to be introed with his 8-bit song. That's great too. I love the character there. I just kind of wanted to get a little bit more of an edge and not be too like kid friendly. But again, Perkins, Kendrick, these guys are great. They have chemistry. This really was a good match. We'll start. Sean,
could I start off, please? Yes. I have a lot to say. Well, first off, you mentioned about having, you know, cruiserweight matches back in 2005, 2006. I don't know if you remember watching those matches, but those were very similar to what we have now. They didn't let them flip as much. They actually made them perform like a heavyweight style, and that was one of the problems and why it didn't stand out being the cruiserweights back in the days, because they didn't let them be cruiserweights. And I feel like they're kind of hindering them now, too. Like, I've watched all the Cruiserweight matches that they've had on the main roster, and they're still working that style. They really haven't changed a whole lot since the last 10 years since we've seen the Cruiserweights.
Do you think that's because when they bring up guys like a Lince Dorado or like a Grand Metalik, they want those flips and those high flying way to kind of pop a little more than it would?
No, I think that they don't want them to overshadow other people on the card because they're not in a main event role. Like this back in the day, you had, bigger guys in the main event and they weren't doing that kind of stuff. Nowadays, you have Seth Rollins in there. You have, Dean Ambrose. You have these guys who can actually move around in the ring and aren't cruiserweights, but they can still do high flying moves. And I feel like they're purposely telling them to not fly as much as, say, they would if they were in a Cruiserweight Classic match. Also not working the same fast-paced style that they would in the Cruiserweight Classic. And part of me feels like that's a mistake, because you're trying to make it stand out. You're changing the color of the ropes. You're changing the ring mat. You're making everything purple around them. Why not make the wrestling change too? I don't understand that part. I also feel like the introduction was fumbled on that Raw. They didn't have the friggin' champion on there, which was a big mistake.
I think that was a bad call.
So like if you don't watch the pay-per-views, TJ Perkins, you just see him on last Monday night's episode, and it's like, who's this guy? They didn't even tell you who he is, or you haven't seen him yet if you didn't watch the pay-per-view. But like
Maybe what they should have done on Raw is they should have done the rematch of the Cruiserweight Championship from the Cruiserweight Classic, and then also had a Fatal 4-Way decide the number one contender, and then go.
Or just
into
have him on the friggin' TV show, you know? Just have him do something. He could be on commentary. It doesn't matter what. Just have him do something they can introduce him, and we can see who he is. Because our first introduction of him is just on the pay per view, and he's all of a sudden this Nintendo character. You know, it's like, come on, you got to do something. And I know
we'll talk a little more about the layout of Raw, because we all thought when the Cruiserweights came up that they were going to be able to make that third hour a little easier. And after the last Raw,
was told that Triple H was in charge of the Cruiserweights exclusively.
It does not feel that way at all.
I mean, there's been some small changes that they've made to the Cruiserweight matches, but overall, it doesn't feel any different than a normal Raw match.
I think, you know, we'll get to Jobo and Steve in a second, but I think that what we're running into here is, I think Triple H wants the Cruiserweights to do what they did in the Cruiserweight Classic. Because if you look at Raw needs that third hour to pop. They need that first hour and that second hour and that third hour wherever.
That was another mistake. They put the Cruiserweights on right before the main event in the first episode that they were on. Why would you do that?
That was a bad decision. The Cruiserweights need to branch the hour, so you need a good mid-card bout, the United States title to open the show, and you need the WWE title to be the centerpiece and the main event. That's what you need right there, and the Cruiserweights are supposed to branch that because of the third hour. You don't need that on SmackDown. You only have 2 hours there, you know? But you can work the tag team stuff in there, work the women's stuff in there, and have the Cruiserweights to keep people's interest, and they're not doing that. But again, we'll get into more of that when we talk about the problem with Raw.
As for the match itself, I thought it was good, not great. I've seen Brian Kendrick have much better matches in the Cruiserweight Classic. I feel like he didn't do as much in this match, and it was mostly TJ Perkins doing most of the work, which is fine, but there were some blown spots in there. It seemed like they were a bit off at times with each other.
Is the captain's hook, Sean?
I hate that. I hate that name so much. I can't stand it. It was just fine. Like, it wasn't anything special. I thought, going into it, I was like, you know what? Perfect opportunity would be, everyone knows who Brian Kendrick is. They can plug him in with TJ Perkins. They can get a great match out of the two of them. And it just felt very, very, I don't know what the word would be.
Restricted?
It just didn't feel like they gave them all the opportunities
limited
that they could have.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I felt like, again, we were going to get more high-flying action or some fast-paced ring work. We were kind of left hanging there. But we'll go to Steve, because Jobo, I don't know if you're very familiar with Cruiserweights.
I've watched a few, like the first few, but I've been keeping up with those people specifically. But
we'll save your opinion in a second. But I want to go to Steve here. Steve, your opinion of Perkins and Kendrick.
I mean, compared to the stuff in the Cruiserweight Classic, it was all right. But I agree. All the placements been off, and like, I didn't like how they didn't put TJ. They didn't put TJ on the Raw before Clash Champions. If you hadn't watched the Cruiserweight Champion or the Cruiserweight Classics, you wouldn't know who the hell this guy is.
No.
And it just is. It wasn't done right. I was a very big fan of the TJ Perkins entrance, even if it's like video game-ish, it reminded me a lot of Mega Man, and I like that.
Yeah, I like it was like almost like an 8-bit song from like
it was one of the Mega Man themes remixed is what it sounds like.
And I don't have a problem with it. My main concern is like it came out of nowhere, you know? Like, there was no reason for it. Like, at least give me something. Give me some reason that he would do that. And to me, it felt like more of a something that Xavier Woods would come out to, because at least we know for a fact
he does up, down.
He does that. Like, yeah. That's his thing. You know, it's like it just happened, and it was like, oh, I guess this is. I mean, it's kind of cool, but like, it doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah. Again, that's one of the reasons why I want them to edge the character up a little bit. Like, let's okay.
Well,
so
the white
meat
baby
face thing is just going to be like
a whole other topic. You know.
Yeah. The promos that T.J. Perkins has been cutting aren't good. I'll say that.
They're fine. They're just generic.
Yes. Given the, oh, it's so great to be here. Yeah. Oh, wow. Golly.
It's a slightly better version. it's a slightly better version of what you'd hear from Apollo Crews. But one last question, and this is going to branch into Jobo's thing. Steve, you're obviously very familiar with the cruiserweight, our old cruiserweight division back when we were kids watching wrestling. Your opinion of the cruiserweight division now versus then?
I mean, with all the time that's gone by, they've obviously improved. Like, a lot of the spots are crazier. They're way more high, fast. Like, I'm not talking about this match, but just matches in general. The really high-paced, crazy moves and stuff. I mean, I think they're moving in the right direction. When you have veterans like Kendrick in there to help kind of talk to the younger guys behind the scenes, there's only room to go up. I mean, I liked the Cruiserweights when I was a kid. I mean, I miss Hurricane and Chavo. It was good. I mean, they're doing a good job, I think. I think they're headed in the right direction. My only problem, though, is, I mentioned this to Sean, it feels a little bit on Raw like they're becoming a sideshow. I said we have about 1 month till Braun Strowman walks out in the middle of a four-person match and just takes out four people. Braun!
I really hope that Braun Strowman doesn't come out in, like, Braun Strowman versus TJP. But anyway, Jobo, I don't know if you're very familiar with the old version of the cruiserweights or the old the cruiserweight division from WCW. I remember it launched guys like Eddie Guerrero, and it launched guys like Chris Jericho and guys like that.
Rey Mysterio, Dean Malenko.
Rey Mysterio, Dean Malenko. There's another one. Anyway, it launched guys like that to the next level, and it got into when the WWE brought it in. It was like, yeah, Chavo Guerrero there, Hurricane. And some other great, Rey Mysterio as well. He had some great guys working the cruiserweight division. It meant something to us because it was like, it was different, and we enjoyed it. I don't really know how to explain this, but I just want your opinion at first glance, the cruiserweight division. What do you think?
I do agree with all of you that it was a mistake not to have TJ Perkins in the debut. I think it's kind of, I feel that there's a lot of people who don't watch the stuff on the network. So when that happens, it's like they're just not really invested. And I feel like that's kind of very similar to maybe some like NXT call-ups. Like when they kind of come up, it's like, okay, why do I care? So I feel like, you know, to people who actually pay attention to it, you know, it's a big deal. And I feel like not having the champ on the first night doesn't help the division. Now the match itself, I thought it was pretty good, compared to what I've seen on the few episodes that I've seen of the Cruiserweight Classic. You know, it did kind of seem a little trickled down from, what we saw on there. But overall, I thought it was good. It didn't do much to help sell me on the division itself. And it's only 2 weeks in, so, you know, I mean, give things time. But, you know, I feel like right now where its place in Raw is that it kind of seems like it's, you know, like you're driving down the road and then the cruiserweights come in and you just kind of swerve and then, okay, you're back on the path. There's, you know, not much, in my opinion, right now. And hopefully that changes, and hopefully we're able to get some more characters, you know, see some more of these people, get to know them and follow them along, and hopefully they can tell some really good stories. But the problem is it's Raw, and, you know, we need the same thing every week. So
another perfect segue, because you were talking about story writing, and we're going to go right into Cesaro versus Sheamus. So I felt like this was a utter failure when it comes to story writing. The match itself, before the ending, I rated the match as an A. I thought this was very good, or a B plus A. This was a very good match. These two definitely work very well together. Their chemistry is through the roof. There was some good storytelling elements in the match, but the ending, I really don't know the correct word. I'll say abysmal. The ending was an abysmal decision by dumb people. And I'll be pretty hard on this ending because it made zero sense. This felt like such a PC generation ending where, oh my God, these guys have been beating each other. Oh, they're too tired. We can't have any more. Now I get it, what they're going for here. They're trying to work these two into a tag team as all they hate each other. But for a 7-match series that you can basically call it a 9-match series because these guys were fighting before that going into this. For a thing that spanned 9 matches, well over a couple of months, this ending was such a letdown, such a poor choice to just have it tied. Oh, we can't pick a winner, so we're both going to give you an opportunity at the tag title. Well, that, I think, was a very big insult.
The worst part was the fact that no one gave a crap about any of these matches the whole time. And then the only point when people actually got invested into any part of the series was during the 7th match towards the end. People actually genuinely cared because they were having a great match. Cesaro almost died. And then people actually wanted to see a winner, and then they didn't give us a winner.
This felt like Vince McMahon sat in his office and was just sitting there and thinking, how can I flip the fans off? Who do they like? Cesaro? Ah, I got the perfect idea. And
it sounds to me like they either the day of or a couple days before they went, you know what would be a funny idea is if no one won and then we put them in a tag team.
Well, I think that they started this, didn't have a plan for it at all.
No.
I'm like, oh, we'll figure something out. And then they saw how great Heath Slater and Rhino were doing on SmackDown. I was like, well, Raw needs a thrown together tag team.
An odd couple. We need to capitalize on that. Here's our odd couple. Here's a guy that's over, and here's a guy that's not over.
Hey, you know what, Raw? You got the Golden Truth. You can make them the odd couple tag team, but they haven't been on TV since R-Truth played Pokemon Go. So
no, that's not true. The Shining Stars were trying to sell him timeshares.
Oh, did they? I guess I missed that one. Okay, well, I guess they bought the timeshare. And
actually,
just
no. Goldust intervened and didn't happen.
Well, maybe they're dead. I don't know.
Going somewhere. I love it. But okay, what makes this even worse is the fact that we all know this is a foregone conclusion that New Day is going to break Demolition's record. They're going to get to 4. I believe they're going to try and make it a nice fat round number and make it 480 or 500 or whatever the hell they want to do. They're trying to get to that number. So what's the point in putting these two together when we know there's no way they're going to win the titles? We know that this is what they... I could see if this was SmackDown, okay? Or if the Usos were the tag champions. They had been holding it for about 100 days, 120 days or something. You throw Cesaro and Sheamus together and you say, guys have a chance. I could buy into that. I can't buy into this. This is what makes me more angry more I think.
The idea is that both guys are kind of floundering as singles stars, so let's put them in a tag team. Which, to my response is, well, then why did you make Jack Swagger go to SmackDown and not Cesaro?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Because Swagger was he's a jobber. I mean, I think he kind of accepts that. But Cesaro is over. People like Cesaro. I believe he's up there. He might be top 10 in merchandise sales. People like Cesaro.
Cesaro has merchandise? That's news to me.
He died. Check on WWEshop.com. He has WWE.com/whatever it is. He has merchandise and, he has the Cesaro section t-shirts or whatever, the sleeveless t-shirts or whatever. I may or may not have ordered one. Cesaro, people like Cesaro. People are invested in Cesaro. People love Cesaro and you're just screwing with him. And I'm going to say this right now, if I look at the three biggest missed opportunities on this roster, Cesaro is right behind Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt's number one. That's just my opinion. But
I think that, you know, when he had that little shoot after the draft, like it really put things into perspective about him and, you know, where they view him and the things he was saying was right about, like, you know, SmackDown's more of, I guess, the wrestling show. And it's like, that's where he would do so well. And you know what? I don't remember who said it. I don't know if it was one of you guys or if it was somebody else who was saying with SmackDown, like, after this thing with Cena and Ambrose with the AJ, who's like a good contender for the championship?
Randy Orton.
Randy Orton. That's about it. Ziggler again. The Miz. They'll drop the Intercontinental. Who? I don't know. Cesaro would have been good for that. Like, yes. You know, you have all these talented people could be good contenders the championship.
Could you imagine Cesaro versus AJ Styles? Could you imagine that match?
That'd be awesome.
Be an amazing match.
Steve, are you still with us?
I'm still here.
Yeah, we'll make the hot tag to Steve right now in just a second. I want to say this for those of you that don't understand or don't know Cesaro's background. He was in Ring of Honor, and the reason he left Ring of Honor was he was underutilized. I believe he was one of the guys that was just never. They didn't really do
one
much
of the
with
longest reigning tag team champions in Ring of Honor history. He was not utilized at all,
or not utilized to his full potential. But as a singles wrestler, and I think one of the reasons he left was because he wanted to have a singles run. Goes to the WWE, gets over, and he's not having that singles run. And they just kind of want to keep him at the lower part of the card. It's frustrating. He's another missed opportunity. Anyways, Steve, hot tag.
I mean, for me, this was my match. Until the ending, this was my match of the night. Like, this match was crazy. These were two guys legitimately trying to beat the hell out of each other. They're both known that they work stiff, so you know when they get in a ring together, there's not going to be a lot of room for wiggling out of stuff. And it was apparent when Cesaro went to do a suicide dive through the middle rope and literally almost almost nailed his head like Brock Lesnar did when Brock Lesnar tried to do the shooting star press.
I would say more like when Lita did the suicide dive.
Yeah, actually, yeah, no, Sean, you're right. It was more like that because he landed square on the top of his head. Even when they land on the floor, Sheamus leaned over and was like, yo, are you all right? but that ending was just atrocious. And Sean and I talked about it before the following Raw, and we had both heard from different podcasts, people speculating that they were going to get put into a tag team. And, oh, look what happened.
I think the tag team was a bad idea. I think it's a bad idea.
It's strange.
I don't think the tag team.
Sorry,
Steve. Go ahead.
I was going to say it seems strange, but like, Sheamus needs something because I mean, like, Sheamus catches a lot of flack. I've said many times in this podcast, I like Sheamus.
I like him a lot too.
I like Sheamus, but he has nothing, and this heel character is failing. Like, he's just he's like another whiny heel who doesn't get anything done. And he acts all smarmy and he's the best. He needs something new.
He needs kind of a if you're gonna go and do Sheamus as a heel, he needs to be an ass kicker. He can't just be like I don't get what I want, fella. That's dumb.
He needs to put Mark Cuban through a table again.
Yes,
he does.
But like you were saying, I don't think the tag team idea of the two of them together is a bad idea. It's just I don't think that it should have been brought upon with this series.
Well, that's why I think it's a bad idea, because this is not...
The idea of the tag team is not a bad idea. The idea of how they got to there is a bad idea.
Well, exactly.
I'm also including the fact that they're not a believable tag. There's no way they're going to get those titles, so what's the point of making them a tag team?
Don't say that.
Don't say that just yet.
We don't know.
I'll be willing to eat my words if they get the tag titles. As a matter of fact, I would gladly eat my words because at least that'll mean that Cesaro gets something. But I don't buy them as a tag team. This is just I get the story, but this story could have gone so much better if you say, all right, you guys, you beat each other to a pulp. There was no winner. You both are going to share a shot at the United States title and a triple threat at a Hell in a Cell. And then add Rusev to the match and make it a fatal four-way. And I would want to watch that. That'd be cool. But this just... I can't even get the words to describe it because we're a PG-13 podcast. All right,
then let's not.
Anyway, no more. We'll talk more about this later, I guess. But anyway, we'll move on to Chris Jericho versus Sami Zayn. I actually kind of like this match. Not flashy. This wasn't quite as good storytelling, but it still was a solid match. You know, it had a build. Jericho wins. Sami Zayn looks like he's going to kind of get the Daniel Bryan booking and lose a lot of matches. Fans get behind him, and then he goes over. But for the most part, I like this match. You know, who wants to start here? Well, you know, we'll go with Steve. Steve, what'd you think of Jericho and Zayn?
I liked it. I mean, I knew that Sami was going to lose just because, you know, Sami. But, I liked it. It was a good match.
They kept it interesting.
Nothing to write home about, but I liked it.
Jobo?
Yeah, it was fine. I don't really have much to say other than it was a fine match. I like both of them, and they didn't disappoint.
And Sean,
yeah, pretty much the same. I mean, it was just fine. I thought the ending kind of came a little out of nowhere, but they didn't really build to one. But to me, the best part of the match was that the entire match, Chris Jericho was referring to Sami Zayn as Sami Zayn. He kept calling him first and last name the whole time. It's like, yeah. Take that, Sami Zayn. It's like, okay.
I love him. I love the thing that he did on Raw with the whole Santa Claus thing.
Oh, that was great. I was laughing so bad.
I'm going to punch you in the face.
Santa Claus? What, are you coming out of there and sit on your lap?
What'd you just say?
No, I didn't say that.
I didn't say anything. Or when he put Enzo and Cass on the list and he spelled, Esno?
Oh, yeah.
He put the jib operator on the...
Well, I mean, really the best that Jericho did throughout the entire show, at least for Clash of Champions, was at the end after him and Owens are standing on the stage. He's singing "We Are the Champions" as it's going on, and just repeating Kevin Owens' name over and over again.
I love like he'll like whenever he interferes in Kevin Owens' match, he'll just say like, "He's my best friend," and it's just like, I love that.
And he comes down wearing a Kevin Owens t-shirt with the scarf.
It was great.
Chris Jericho's good. It was a good match, but I do feel like this match is going somewhere a bit. I know what they want to do. They want to do Jericho versus Owens. I don't know when.
Survivor Series. That's when it should be.
That's when it should be, but I would not fault them for doing it a little later, maybe even holding out until the Rumble. But
let's see if he's around for the Rumble.
Yes, we'll see about that. But anyway, all right, so Zayn, Jericho, good match. Probably the only like match we don't have too much negativity to say or anything negative at all. We'll move on to the women's match. Triple threat. You have Bayley, Sasha Banks, and Charlotte with Dana Brooke there, who Dana Brooke continues just to be the worst manager in the history of managing. She is just abysmal. And I get it that she's supposed to be a klutz, but like she's doing things that make zero sense. Like it took her forever to get the rope and help Charlotte interfere or whatever. Like, come on. Like, that's just...
I don't know if I've talked to... If I've mentioned this to Steve or not while watching Raw, but I am enamored with Dana Brooke's wrestling attire, and she was wearing it on the pay-per-view as well. Have I talked to you about this?
Great. It's great.
The purple thing?
Well, she wears this thing, and there's no back on it, so you get clear... You get clear side boob the whole time. And she's clearly not wearing a bra or anything. So, like, when she's moving around, it's kind of like a mesh shirt. So, like, you can see, like, what's going on. And, like, if she's moving around, like, her boobies are flopping all over the place the whole time. And it's very distracting.
It is. I mean, it's the best outfit right now.
Well, Sean.
I think my biggest takeaway from the Charlotte Bayley Sasha match is when... I think Charlotte went for a low drop kick to Sasha to knock her out of the ring, and her boot hit Sasha's shorts and gave her a world class wedgie, and you essentially saw all of Sasha Banks' butt, and I just saw that, I was like, boy, that wow, I gotta go for a walk.
Joe, what did you see during the match?
Yeah,
I saw a good match.
Yeah,
we have we have an esteemed colleague who's been on the podcast before that likes to talk up Charlotte as the best heel in wrestling right now, and I don't know if I agree with that.
I don't agree with it either. I think Charlotte is good. She definitely is not her father in terms of level of being a heel. Like,
no.
The wall that Charlotte keeps hitting is the fact that her character is that she's her father's daughter. And, you know, we like her dad. We like her dad a lot. And it's very difficult for us to hate her because we like her dad so much. Now, she kind of almost had a good thing going where she was like, I don't like my dad anymore. I'm just going to not be my dad's daughter. I'm going to make my own legacy. And it's like, okay, that's fine. All right. So go down that and make a character we genuinely hate, but they haven't put her up against someone that, you know, they haven't really put her in a match and had her do things to someone we really like that something like what I'm trying to say is that she hasn't done something to someone we like to the level that would make us hate her.
Well,
you know,
We hate her because she's constantly winning, and she's winning by cheating with Dana. That's why we hate her.
That's we're supposed to, but they could go a step further. They could.
What do you want her to do? Miz. Kidnap people? Kill people? What do you want? Like, what do you want her to do as a heel? Like, she's cheating.
I don't know. I mean, like the cheating doesn't really feel.
It sounds like you just don't like her.
I mean, I think I'm arguing the other way. I don't hate her, and I want to hate her, but I don't. That's my argument. Anyway,
well,
all right.
I'm so sorry for you.
She's not making me hate her, Sean.
Yeah. My thing with all of this thing right now is that on Raw, in terms of women's competitors, you have those four: Sasha, Bayley, Charlotte, and Dana, and then Nia Jax. That's about it. Alicia Fox.
Alicia Fox decides to throw a tissue box.
I think Summer Rae's in there too.
So apparently, I heard she's injured.
Oh,
so
whatever.
Though I keep hearing rumors that Emma's going to become like ready to come back at any point.
I heard she's cleared.
So what I would do, you know, you do this Sasha and Charlotte rematch, and then you can have Emma with Charlotte. But then would you do Sasha and Bayley or Sasha and
Well, hold on. You're
Naya?
mixing heel and heel for one.
Yeah. What do you do? That's the
you
problem.
You do Sasha and Charlotte and then Bayley and Emma.
Yeah.
Emma comes back, who does Dana Brooke go to? I mean,
who cares?
My thing is that, you know, it's what do you do with them? You know, like that's it. Like, are you just going to, for Raw until the next draft, are you just going to rotate these same matches around for them? And that just gets stale and boring. And that would be a shame because they're, you know, in terms of like Sasha and Bayley and Charlotte, like they're great competitors and they deserve more.
I think something that's really hindering Raw is the elephant in the room. And we'll talk about this now. Paige. And as soon as Paige got suspended, that kind of really, really hurt this division. The stuff with Del Rio.
She wasn't really on TV that much anyway.
She wasn't. We knew that she was hurt, but she was still around. Like, it wasn't like we were thinking, oh, she's completely gone. She was still around. Like, even though she was injured, she was fighting through injury. But when she got suspended and the stuff with Del Rio started to come out, that's when we really thought, oh, God, well, they don't have Paige. This division is a wreck. I mean, where do people go? Like, who fights? How can we take Bayley seriously in a title match if she's only beaten Dana Brooke? Like, that's the problem with the Raw women's division. It's that it's not deep. It's only about four girls deep, and that's it. Well, three girls deep because you really can't take Dana Brooke seriously. So it's Bayley.
Like my Saturday night.
Hey.
Right, Joe.
Bazinga.
Ho
ho! Hey! Oh! Whatever. Insert more noises. But anyway, like that's the problem with the Raw women's division. It's you're only three wrestlers deep, and that's it. And it's just
and you know the match itself, I thought was fine.
It was good.
They all work well off of each other. I mean, they've worked with each other since NXT, so like you know they have good chemistry together. So
yeah, it was fine.
I felt like and this is going to be my criticism before we segue into the United States Championship match, which we'll dig into a little bit. I felt like at this point in the card, we had just gone through the cruiserweight division, the cruiserweight match, Cesaro and Sheamus, Chris Jericho and Sami Zayn, and now Charlotte, Bayley, and Sasha, kind of ready for a little bit of like a squash match or a breather or like a Braun Strowman match or something to kind of let us recuperate and go into the United States Championship match a little rested as a crowd. But no, we didn't get that here. They went right into the United States Championship match. Roman Reigns versus Rusev. I want to talk about that now. Okay, so not terrible. I think my biggest criticism of this match is after what went down at SummerSlam, I felt this match deserved to have a stipulation to it, whether it be a tables match or a hardcore match or something along the lines of that. It deserved to have some guys, you know, go through tables or be slammed into stuff and be an aggressive match. I also think when you have hardcore or extreme rules matches, they benefit Roman Reigns because his moveset isn't really that great. I mean, it's kind of like a bunch of like awesome moves for kids slammed together into one character. When he breaks out a chair, he breaks out a table or a kendo stick or whatever he does. It's interesting. Like he's able to, you know, get something else there and show us that he's an aggressive guy. I felt like that could have benefited this match a little bit. Also, Lana got ejected. I really thought they were going to wait to do or wait till Hell in a Cell to do a title change, but they decided to go for it here. It's not the worst thing I've seen, but it definitely wasn't good because it just got boring. I mean, again, I thought like a gimmick should have been placed on this match.
Okay, Vinnie Rue.
What's that? Just me? Like I felt
it's
like
his first title defense. Like it's his first chance at the title. They didn't have a first match.
Well, they didn't, but that's all the reason as to why I would have, because their first match was
it was
a brawl. That's what it was. It was a brutal brawl. And I genuinely felt emotion towards that. I was like, okay, these guys hate each other.
Yeah, because
you
want to kill Roman Reigns. That's your emotion.
Well, no. Don't try to paint me up as I want to murder Reigns. It's like these guys want to rip each other to shreds. Okay, great. Let's get some chairs and tables going. I want to see Rusev be put through the announcer's table. I want to see Reigns be speared through a chair. I want to see this. I want to see it right now. But it just kind of was a singles match. And you heard in the crowd, they were kind of chanting like, was it CM Punk at one point, Delete at one point. It was just boring. That's just my opinion. But all right, who wants to go first? Anyone? Any takers?
Actually, where I was watching this at like midway through this match, everybody went home. So like I actually didn't. I went home too, so I missed the last half of this match. But I will say what I saw was all right. I feel like there wasn't too much. You know, like Roman was the guy who ruined his wedding ceremony. So like, that's kind of a heelish thing to do. And I'm like, okay, well, how would you make that work? And then I thought back and I'm like, well, back when Roman was like trying to win the title and he had the title and the whole thing was Sheamus and Vince McMahon and Triple H, Rusev was a part of that. And yeah. I'm like, okay, well, you can have that Roman's motivation for doing this is that Rusev was there trying, like, getting in the way of every chance that he had to get the title or keep the title. So yeah, if you could kind of take Roman on, like, kind of this, I'm no booker or booking expert. I'm still relatively.
Certainly no,
like,
Booker T.
Definitely not Booker T. But October is going to be 1 year that I've watched. What was that?
You don't have a shucky ducky quack quack moment.
But I October will be 1 year that I started watching wrestling.
So
you know, I'm no expert, but what I would have done maybe to kind of, you know, push Roman along, he's on like this after the whole Triple H thing caused it in the Universal Championship, he's out to like get the people that, you know, wronged him. So, you know, he starts with Rusev, then he can work up with Sheamus, and, you know, maybe if you...
What, Del Rio?
You know, yeah, Del Rio, nah.
Barrett?
Yeah, but, no, nah, like, he could even, like, go to, you know, like, if, you know, he wanted to get at Stephanie, because, you know, he can't do anything, you know, with Stephanie, but if he really wanted to cause, like, you know, kind of turmoil with her, maybe he shows up on SmackDown and attacks... who like Bray Wyatt, and who else is there? There's somebody else.
Well, Joe, you have to remember, wrestling fans have very short-term memory. We can't remember things from it like a month or two ago. So how do you expect me to remember that?
Well, that's why I said I'm no booking expert, but like I have a good memory with things. So
no, you're a wrestling fan. You must have a horrible memory.
Who's Roman Reigns? I mean, like, if you had like a reason why he was doing this to Rusev, I think it would have felt a little more complete for me.
Yeah, because he's a dick. That's why he did it.
And you know, hopefully the United States Championship, you know, it helps him. I mean, we're all holding out for the day he turns heel, but it's never going to happen. But you know, a man can dream.
You know what I will say, Jobo, I kind of agree with you. I think that the Stone Cold aspect of a Roman Reigns push could have helped him. Like, you know, Stone Cold going back and getting revenge on Vince or whoever got in his way, that could have helped Roman Reigns. Like, sure, I don't want to see Roman Reigns versus Sheamus again, and I don't want to see I wouldn't have wanted to see Roman Reigns versus Del Rio, but I agree that would have been interesting. All right, so we'll go to Steve here, and then we'll hit Sean with the hot tag. Steve, Roman Reigns versus Rusev. They ejected the best part of the match, which I thought was bad.
I actually I liked this match. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, you love him or hate him, Roman, he works hard. He might have the most extensive moveset, but he gets behind it. And Rusev wasn't doing too much with that title, so I mean, why the hell not put it on Roman? I mean, it's obviously part of his punishment, you know.
I agree with you. I think this is a good direction for Reigns. I think I just wish it was a little better because I'm tired of I'll say this before I go to Sean. I'm tired of Bowen Reigns. I really just am. And I think it all really started to click for me when I was they had a house show in Newark, in Delaware. They had a house show there, and Reigns came out. That was the one before Battleground where he returned. And there was booze. There was a lot of booze. And I saw this one kid sitting there with a Roman Reigns shirt on. And he's looking at Roman Reigns and he's cheering. And then he looks up and he sees all these people booing. And he looks back at Reigns and he kind of just stops cheering. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't like the guy. But I don't like him that much to hate. Because, like, for me, like, when I was a kid, as like an 8-year-old watching wrestling, I got into John Cena. I was like, John Cena's cool. He's big and he's strong. Hulk Hogan, he's big and he's strong. But I never really understood it until now. Like, okay, I like a Chris Benoit. I like a Eddie Guerrero because they're technical masterpieces. Bret Hart, they're cool. They Shawn Michaels, they have a cool, you know, move set. I'm tired of booing Roman Reigns. Let the kids have their hero. Just if you're gonna make him for the kids, remember that he has to also appeal to the adults, because the only way the kids are going to be able to see Roman Reigns at pay-per-views is if the adults buy the tickets. That's all I'm saying. But Sean, your opinion on Reigns versus Rusev?
I agree with Steve. I thought it was a decent match. Like Steve was saying, Rusev really wasn't doing anything with the US title, and you might as well put it on someone who, you know, could actually not only bring it back to the same level that John Cena had it, but also, you know, give it some more credibility than what it had before. I can't say anything bad about the idea. To me, it makes total sense.
My only critique is maybe hold out until Hell in a Cell, because at least they could have possibly had a Hell in a Cell match as a blowover. But I mean, they could still do that now. They could do a rematch or something, but they can't do a rematch now because they did it on Raw. I don't know. I mean, again, I don't completely hate it. I agree with you guys. I think it's about time the belt started to get worked back up a little bit. I think Reigns will bring back the open challenge, which I'm kind of interested in seeing. I mean, again, like we'll see if Reigns can really do some things with the United States Championship and bring it back to level it was. Saw what John Cena did. John Cena slowly started to get over using the belt. So that's just me. My only question is, where does Rusev go from here?
I don't know, whoever
whoever wants to answer that question. Like,
maybe I hope they give him something, because he's another guy I like that doesn't get a lot of opportunity. He's a he's an interesting guy. He's very athletic for a big dude, and I hope he gets something.
I think he needs some time off. You know, maybe he should go go to Puerto Rico and get a timeshare and just chill for a bit.
They're swindling people, though. They're stealing money. They're criminals.
Sean, where do you think Rusev's going to go from here?
Probably back to catering, more than likely.
Back to KBA. He's going to go eat some more.
I don't know. I kind of agree with Jobo. I mean, there's not really much for him to do unless you're going to put him in a program with a guy like Sami Zayn. I don't know, because another guy who has nothing going on, I don't know what you do with him. I mean, they'll probably do a rematch, more than likely, at the pay-per-view. But once it comes Survivor Series and Roadblock, I guess, whatever we're calling it, I don't know what you would do.
Maybe you go the route of Sami Zayn. I mean, I don't know if you do the rematch now. I mean, maybe they go with Jericho.
No, they're doing
Reigns.
A rematch. Trust me, they're doing a rematch.
They're gonna do something at Hell in a Cell. Actually, no, Hell in a Cell's SmackDown, isn't it?
No, Hell in a Cell's Raw.
No Mercy is Hell in a Cell's Raw.
I really want them to not do this in the Hell in a Cell. I want them to do the women's match in the Hell in a Cell.
That'd be cool. That would be
cool.
Like the first ever women's match.
Yeah.
Hell in a Cell.
Why not? I mean, it's the blow off of Sasha and Charlotte. Put them in the cell. We don't need to see the U.S. title match again in a cell. We saw that already. You know, Roman Reigns had a Hell in a Cell match with Bray Wyatt last year, and I didn't think it was that good. So, you know,
wasn't that good.
I'd rather see the women in there. You know, first time ever. Sasha might die, but you know, first time ever.
Yeah, I can only imagine Sasha okaying some bumps she just should not be taking. But it's interesting you bring that up, Sean. They probably won't do it. They'll probably only have one Hell in a Cell match.
No, they'll have two.
They'll have two?
They'll have two. They usually do.
Oh, we'll see. I really hope they do, because I'd be interested in seeing a women's
I just don't know if it's going to be the women's or the U.S. title. I feel like it's going to be the U.S. title, but I think it should be the women's.
What about the Universal title? You think they're not going to do
No, they'll be in there, too.
Okay.
That's a two.
All right. Oh, okay. It's one or the other. And then, okay. All right. So let's move on to the Universal Championship match. Rollins versus Owens. I liked this match. I really think the card would have helped towards the latter portion if I had a little bit of a break, and I'm going to keep saying that until I get that. But I really felt like this was a good match. It ended the correct way. Jericho interferes. You have a ref get knocked out. All this stuff happens. All this Healy stuff happens. And then when like Sean said, when it ends, you get a great moment of Jericho singing "We Are the Champions" as they back up the ramp. Rollins looked good in this match. Owens looked good in this match. I gave it a B+. Again, it would have been an A if I had a chance to just recuperate and take a breath of enthralling wrestling, get a squash, like a 5-minute squash match with Braun Strowman and whoever, and then go to this match. But they didn't do that. They went with Owens versus Rollins almost immediately after Rusev and Reigns was over. What do we think here? Let's start with Sean. Owens?
I thought it was pretty good. Maybe the best match on the show. But even saying that, I felt like it was still missing something. I don't know what exactly that is. Maybe it was just an extra stake or something. But I feel like it was just missing something. Something felt off. And, you know, I don't have a problem with the outcome. I like the idea that Jericho interfered. My only question is, like, do we go to the straight rematch next? What do we do with Jericho? I'm curious to what they do for the next match. I assume they're going to go straight rematch in the cell. I don't know that for a fact. But to me, and this is talking about, I think I was talking to Joe about this the other day. I feel like they're really trying to extend this Rollins-Triple H storyline as far as they can go. And it feels to me a lot like what they did with Triple H and Sting a couple years ago, where there wasn't a lot there, and they tried to expand it over months. And it was very difficult because the guys just wouldn't show up. And then Sting wasn't there, and then Triple H was just doing random stuff, and it didn't feel right for most of the build. This is kind of what it feels like now between him and Triple H. They're kind of mending their time with this Universal title program with Kevin Owens, but realistically, that's not the feud. The feud is him and Triple H. It's just they're using this as a catalyst to get there, but they're doing it so slow. And there's not an issue with doing slow builds. I have no problem with slow builds, but I feel you need to do something every so often, and I don't know if they're doing that. It doesn't feel that way.
Before we get to Joe, Bo, and Steve, I kind of agree. Like, they're your first point, there was something missing in this match. They definitely want to do Rollins versus Triple H. I'm thinking at Mania.
That's my thought.
That's kind of the popular opinion. They want to do it at Mania. So the only logical way to do that is to just kind of have Triple H around every corner screwing Rollins and continuing just to take out his anger on Rollins for quote unquote failing to be the man. I feel like Triple H is going to get involved at Hell in a Cell, maybe, or even Survivor Series if they go that route. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do, but I kind of am interested.
Well, like, what's Rollins' program going to be next? Who is he going to feud with? When he's done, like, who does he feud with?
When he's done with the shots of the Universal Championship, maybe he goes to Zayn. So maybe you do Rusev and Zayn.
First of all, those are two baby faces.
You got a point.
And Sami Zayn's not even on TV.
Rollins and Jericho?
Jericho might have Kevin Owens, or he might not be around.
I don't know. I don't know what you do. Oh, God. I hope they don't go to Rollins Reigns. I hope they don't do it. Anyway, bad thoughts. All right, let's move. Let's move to Steve.
Again, two baby faces. Still doesn't work.
Yeah, true. Steve, what'd you think of Owens versus Rollins?
It was good until the end. Like, that ending with the ref was so screwy and messed up. I was just like, what are we doing?
It was very convoluted.
It was super convoluted. And it's just like, I mean, it's like we've said it's like we've been saying the whole, like, most of the show. Like, here we go with the authority again. This is like typical authority garbage where they would call in their own ref, and you know they would mess it up that way. This match was good up until the end. By the end, I was just like, all right, we're gonna do this now. Whatever. They're really trying to milk the whole like Seth and Triple H running into each other again. I can tell that.
I don't like the fact that Stephanie is kind of in the middle of this, and she's
a key part of it.
Well, I just don't like which, like, her character work is just not good in this feud. Like, it's just, what is she? Does she know or does she not know?
She obviously knows.
But like, why? Like, if she's trying to play this, oh God, I can't believe this happened. Oh, I'm so sorry. Type of crap. Then don't send the ref out. Don't get involved. Make it seem like you don't know what happened, and you're
trying.
Well,
that's another part of the storyline, is the Mick Foley being a pawn in all this, and that's what that's part of. It's that she's basically lying to Mick Foley, because Seth Rollins, he says himself, he doesn't believe her, and we all know that she's lying. It's Mick Foley who's part of the storyline who believes her and, you know, is being swindled here.
I think I just am tired of the authority stuff. I really am. Just kind of tired of it.
Okay.
I'm ready for just some general feuds and nothing that leads back to the authority. But anyway, we'll wrap up with Joe Bo. Rollins and Owens.
As I mentioned, I left.
I was gonna say, did you see this match?
Yeah, I didn't see the match, so instead I'm going to read the plot synopsis of the movie Mr. Nanny starring Hulk Hogan.
Okay.
Former wrestler Sean Armstrong, Terry Hulk Hogan, takes a job as a bodyguard and nanny to Alex Jr. and Kate, the children of Alex Mason. The kids receive little attention from their father and take out their energy in pranks on their babysitters. Despite their initial hostility, Sean and the children soon bond. When criminal Tommy Thanatos kidnaps the kids to get his hands on a new computer chip, Sean must rescue them.
10 out of 10.
Great opinion, Joe Bo.
Also, Afa Noai is also in the movie. So, just so you know.
Okay, well, all right.
It's Roman's
final
father.
Yep.
That's great. All right,
final thoughts on Clash of Champions, and then we'll talk about the Raw that happened afterwards.
It was okay.
It was fine.
Jobo, you are a national treasure.
It was a forgettable pay-per-view.
Oh God. Well, speaking of forgettable,
I think the better question is who won, Raw or SmackDown this month?
SmackDown.
See, SmackDown, Backlash to me only had one good match.
I think SmackDown as a show as a whole has been.
I'm talking the pay-per-views.
Pay-per-view wise.
True, Backlash may have been a one-trick pony, but things happened. Stories progressed. Changes. Things changed.
Yeah, that's
true. Are leading to something. This doesn't feel like things are leading to anything.
All right, maybe I'll take Backlash. I just can't get over the Kane victory. That's still bothering me.
That's dumb. That's like terrible. I'm gonna compare Backlash to, like, you know, you have that high school crush and you really like her, but she has the pimple. And like the Kane victory was a giant pimple on her forehead. That's it to me. Other than that, she's fine. Except for that, you know, giant pimple. But anyway, all right, let's move on to the Raw that happened. And normally we wouldn't talk about what happened on Raw, but we have to, because this Raw was awful. And I understand they were up against Monday Night Football. I understand they were up against The Debate, which The Debate was just bad. Like why did they have a tag match at the end of The Debate? Or wait, I'm getting The Debate and Raw mixed up. Anyway, the Raw was just terrible. Like, I don't think I've ever watched such a bad. I mean, I turned off The Debate and started watching Raw.
I've seen worse.
It was just like, my God.
When you start the show with a half hour match between Rusev and Roman Reigns, that's just, you're setting the bar for crap, pretty much. Like, that was just like, it was so bad. It was so bad. It wasn't even like a good match. Like, their match at Clash of Champions was better. This was just really drawn out and not enjoyable, at least for me.
It didn't really have a build. It just kind of happened.
Well, I mean, it's Rusev's rematch, because, you know, every ex-champion gets a rematch clause, but they went about it very lame way.
I was more
way.
Wondering why Anderson Gallows got a rematch, because
they
lost already. Why did you get a rematch?
That was like odd. The only thing I remember hearing was, oh, Francesca got involved, and they want to see a clean match here. And I was like, well, no, they lost. That's it. They're done. Like, when Big E got involved, okay, that kind of leads to a rematch, because Big E was, at the time, not supposed to be in the match.
But that's so backwards, though. Like, you would do that finish on TV and then do the real title match on the pay-per-view.
Yeah. I don't get it. That was a bad Raw. Jobo, did you see the Raw?
I did, and it was the most entertaining thing was Jericho, but that's about it.
I love during the tag match with Owens and Jericho, when Jericho was singing like he was going like, oh, 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 and Kevin Owens is going, that's the lead singer of Fozzy.
You know what they should have done as a jab at the debate? They should have had Jericho and Enzo debate. That would have been interesting. I don't know. That's just me. I mean, they kind of did that, but I don't know. That's just me. But the debate was bad, and this was bad, but this was definitely worse than The Debate. That's just my opinion. Anyway, let's move to talking about what's going on in SmackDown now for No Mercy. It has five matches booked. Total of five matches booked. We have the triple threat for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, or the WWE World Championship, AJ Styles for Dean Ambrose and John Cena. We have the women's SmackDown match. We have Becky Lynch versus Alexa Bliss for the championship there. Heath Slater and Rhino defend their tag titles against the Usos. The Miz versus Ziggler. Ziggler putting his career on the line. Okay. And then we have Randy Orton versus Bray Wyatt. Let's talk about those so far. So, Sean, what is your opinion on those matches?
I actually think it looks pretty good. I'm interested in the triple threat. I think it will be a good match. I'm interested in the women's match. I think it's going to be interesting to see how Alexa does. And I can't wait for the Usos to win the titles, because they are going to. Randy Orton's going to win. Great. and what else is on the Dolph match? I don't care. Dolph can leave for all I care. I don't know. Who cares?
we'll talk about Dolph's career in a second. Steve, you no mercy so far. What do you think of the card stacks up?
I'm pretty amped. I got pretty invested in it after the Talking Smack segment on Tuesday where John Cena just laid into the Ambrose. Yeah. That was really good because he did it in a way that wasn't insulting. He just said the truth, and it was completely uncut, not scripted, and it was just him talking, which I really enjoyed. And as far as the other matches, Usos versus Rhino and Slater, I really like. I love the Usos' new look and their new theme song, and it works. I guess they joined the Bloods now, I guess.
Yep.
But, wear red. But that looks really good. And Ziggler can leave. He should have left a while ago. I don't really care. But yeah, no, everything looks good. I'm excited for the women's match, too. I'm excited for Becky and Alexa Bliss, a.k.a. Kelly Ripa.
I'll say this. Everything.
I didn't even think of that.
Everything just kind of has a purpose, you know. I feel like everything has a purpose so far. But anyway, all right. So Jobo, no mercy.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I like I've mentioned before, I'm really enjoying SmackDown right now, and I think those are going to be some really good matches.
Joe, what would you rate the
card for No Mercy?
I'd give it 5 bags of popcorn and 2 sodas.
Oh, good, good.
Oh, good. All right.
I really think that SmackDown does a good job of storytelling. I definitely think it's a big part of it. But they're making deals with us. So they're giving us things that we want in exchange for us to kind of put up with some things. Like, I can tolerate the Miz a little bit as the Intercontinental Champion because I'm getting Slater and Rhino as the tag champions. I can tolerate the Usos possibly winning the tag championship because Becky Lynch is the women's champion. And that's the way I look at it, is that I'm getting things that I want, and on Raw, not really.
Kevin Owens is Kevin Owens is a champion, Roman Reigns.
I don't care about Roman Reigns.
That's if I use your logic, that's what it means.
Yes.
Oh, I like Kevin Owens as a champion.
I get it, but I'm getting things that I want on SmackDown, and things matter, and on Raw, it just doesn't feel like anything matters. Like, I feel like SmackDown is taking a lot of what works in NXT, where like things build to things. Like, Bobby Roode beating Almas is going to lead to something better, and whatever, and you know, it's all going to lead to Roode versus Nakamura and other matches like that. And I just, like, it has a purpose. Everything has a purpose. And it gives you reason to watch every match on the card. The fact that Sheamus and Cesaro didn't lead to Cesaro in a match, like, it just, that gives me no reason to watch.
Oh, well, that's just one feud.
That's more of a overview of everything. But anyway, all right. So that's No Mercy. No Mercy is set to go October 9th. So we will see about that. All right. Let's talk about some big wrestling stories around right now. Well, we talked about Paige. Looks like she's going in for surgery. Do we have any more information on that? Jobo.
I don't think we have too much
information. It was Steve. You were the one that were talking about the story before we got on.
Well, I know she's had lingering shoulder issues, but the reason she went out was because of her neck. I would only assume that the surgery would be on her neck, considering that's the big problem. I think her shoulder is something she can work through. But that's just all speculation at this point. I have no credible sources or anything, but I can imagine if there's any surgery needed, it will be.
Things just aren't breaking well for her. Like,
whoa, analogy.
but they just are. I mean, like, it. I feel bad for Paige because obviously before this she was battling some injuries, but then of course she also was in the middle of that very bizarre heat magnet of a relationship with Del Rio. She still is. Things are a little bit calmer now that Del Rio's out of the picture. Well, in terms of in the WWE, she's still of course dating him, but like her career is definitely taking a turn for the worst in 2016. And I think it's a large portion of that due to the relationship and, you know, her battling injuries, but she's also very young and I don't think she's made a lot of good decisions. And we've been talking about this before. This kind of all feels like a 20 some year old making irrational decisions because she's 20 something. You know,
I mean, That's what we discussed. I agree.
Yeah. Hopefully she can, you know, recover from whatever this is, and she'll be back soon and really, really kick some ass.
Yeah, I mean, I like her. I like her a lot. She's great in the ring, but this is just, it's not good. I feel for Paige. All right, so another big story is TNA. Looks like TNA is running out of money. Sean, you've alluded to it before. TNA is almost like a cockroach, and they just won't die no matter what you do.
It sounds like this is the worst of them, though.
Yes.
This is like right before they're about to get squished.
Yeah, apparently they don't have enough money for Bound for Glory, and if that doesn't happen, it does not. They're also lingering on payments again.
Well, not just Bound for Glory. They still need to do TV tapings after that, and that's even more money. I mean, they could get money for Bound for Glory, but that doesn't settle their problems.
No. Of course, it was reported earlier in the summer they had been evicted from wherever they were the Impact Zone. They had headquarters in Florida.
No, their headquarters is in Tennessee.
Oh, their headquarters in Tennessee. They got evicted from that, and they basically were running their office out of a storage facility.
It was their own, where they have their merchandise that no one buys. Yes. They were running it out of there.
Their website also, if you haven't noticed, is starting to break a little bit. I went to their shop, and all the images are not working, and a lot isn't working.
Their website's never worked. this is the company who, at one point on their website, had Sting listed as Stong. So, what do you expect?
It's sad because as a kid, I remember like 2005 watching TNA, and they had Kurt Angle there, and it's Scott Steiner, and it was kind of entertaining. Like, sure,
Kurt
it wasn't
Angle
going
wasn't there
to
in
be
2005.
He wasn't.
No, he didn't get there until late 2006.
2006, I might have been what I was referring to, but like 2006, 2005, 2006, they had some fun stuff there. But they always kind of wanted to be different, and to me, they had no, like, they didn't, they were doing different things for the sake of being different. That's never a good idea. Like the six-sided ring is just not, it's like AJ Styles said before that taking bumps off it is not fun. I feel bad for TNA. I feel bad for everyone that may lose their job. But rumor is, along comes the WWE. So what's going on here? WWE putting in an offer to buy TNA?
I find it a little hard to believe, just because for so long they've just ignored TNA. And it would be weird that they would get them now. I mean, I know that the tape library could be useful to them for guys like AJ and Samoa Joe or Rude, but it just doesn't seem like something that they would do. And I know I was talking to Steve about it not too long ago, saying how this feels a lot like what happened to WCW. You know, you had an independent investing company, that being Eric Bischoff back in WCW, who was trying to buy the company, and then WWE comes in at the last minute, takes it for cheap. I don't want to say that's what's happening now, but Billy Corgan's trying to get his financial group to get the money. They don't have the money yet, and Vince could come in and swoop them up for cheap again.
Dixie Carter definitely doesn't have any money left to run this thing. But
oh no, she has money. It's just all of her money is from her father, because her father's an oil tycoon. And, you know, he was the one that was given all the money, basically he was taking care of everything. And then eventually he cut her off. So then it became a legit business. Cause at that point it was just a hobby for her.
Yeah.
And now then it became an actual business. And then it started tanking. They lost their Spike deal. They lost their Destination America deal. You know, just not good. Not good.
Yeah, things aren't looking good for TNA. But okay, so one of the rumors I saw, and again, this is more off of Wrestling Observer, was the WWE was thinking about putting in an offer. Again, Sean, you hit on the library, but it's no secret, I guess. WWE once broken Matt Hardy. They like the character. They think that it would definitely work in the WWE.
I don't think it would work in the WWE.
No.
Could this be a way for them to just kind of get the library, get some more mid-card talent, because Raw is going to need some and SmackDown's going to need some, maybe like five or six guys, and also get Broken Matt Hardy? It kind of seems like the deal for the WWE may be buy cheap, get the library, bring in some talent, maybe a couple of front office people just for some just small jobs. And
yeah, to bring John Gabora back. Yeah, that's a good idea. He really screwed around with you last time.
Well, I mean, like that, it just seems like the deal for the WWE is more than just the library. It's like they want some talent.
It's
versus
mostly the library. But you can't just outright buy the library. You have to buy the whole company.
Yeah, you have to buy the whole company to get that. But I don't know. Steve, do you have an opinion on TNA going out of business?
Obsolete mules.
And Jobo, are you that familiar with TNA? At all?
I don't care.
Do you like Joe? Do you like TNA?
I haven't really watched anything.
I like what the original TNA stands for.
Yeah, I don't think Joe got guesses.
Hey.
No, I know.
Exactly. Oh, you're a bunghole.
All right, and our final wrestling story, and then of course we'll plug away and we'll head on out of here. It looks like Ryback is joining Bellator.
No, he's not. He had a conversation with Scott Coker on the phone, but they it was just, to me, it sounded like he was just humoring him. There's no serious talks going on.
I don't know. Maybe we'll have to check in with Ryback at some point later. Not now, but later.
I heard it from Scott Coker's mouth himself, so I don't think it's happening.
Well, like, what? Hypothetically speaking, if this does happen, that would be the ultimate insult to CM Punk.
Why?
Like, that would, because you know why Ryback is doing this.
He maybe he wants to do it, you know?
He seems like a guy with a lot of interests that involve fighting people.
Maybe he wants to fight, you know? People just want to fight, you know?
I don't know.
I don't think it has anything to do with CM Punk.
I you can't ignore that, though. You can't ignore the fact that CM Punk is in a UFC and Ryback's trying to go to Bellator.
CM Punk could have went to Bellator.
He could have, but I don't know. Something seems a little fishy. Steve, what do you make of this? Do you think it's just a rumor?
I don't know. I mean, right now it's just a rumor. I haven't seen anything official from Scott Coker. I mean, I know on Ryback's Snapchat and stuff, he's been training a lot of boxing and stuff lately, but people just train boxing for general health. Doesn't mean he wants to fight. I won't make an opinion until there's more facts, but if Ryback did decide to fight over in Bellator, I think he would probably get beat up. Just because you're big doesn't mean you can fight good.
Well, I think that they would put him in there with someone who also doesn't know what they're doing.
They're going to put him in there with Bobby Lashley.
Actually, I think Bobby Lashley would actually beat Ryback.
Bobby Lashley would beat the snot out of Ryback.
What if UFC buys CM Punk out of his contract, okay, and CM Punk goes to Bellator?
No, that would never happen.
Yeah, CM Punk would have to get fat as f*** to fight Ryback.
Yeah, you know, Benny, there's these things called weight classes.
I know. Just,
they don't.
Just,
they don't do those. They don't do those open weight fights. By the way, sorry, I realized what I just said. You're gonna have to give me a stone cold beep in there, Sean.
That's okay.
Oh God, can you imagine if they were able to get those two together? That'd be interesting. Anyway, that does it pretty much for Blah Blah Wrestling here. Not a lot in terms of headlines, unless you want to count Ziggler, but not a lot of people care. But that kind of does it. We will check back in with you for the No Mercy review when we see if Ziggler is still employed with the WWE or not. But for now, you can follow me on Twitter at Benny on the Radio. That once again is Benny on the Radio. At this point, if you don't know, Sean's at the _ Brack Show. I keep forgetting Steve's. Yours is Inhayar.
No, that's my Instagram. That's your Twitter. Saiyan Barbarian.
And Jobo doesn't have a Twitter.
Right.
But I think he still has a plug, though.
Yeah, okay. I do have something I'd like to do real quick. Since I don't have a Twitter, I will read you the plot synopsis of Suburban Commando starring Hulk Hogan. So, problems with his rocket compel space-traveling vigilante Shep Ramsey, Hulk Hogan, to spend some time on Earth. Plucking himself down in the middle of suburbia, he rents a room from Charlie and Jenny Wilcox, Christopher Lloyd and Shelley Duvall. Yes.
What?
Shep attempts to acclimate himself. He skateboards, he accosts a mail carrier, but he's destined to be a fish out of water. But when his outer space enemies arrive and pick a fight with his new friends, Shep is ready to prove his mettle. Also, The Undertaker's in this movie.
What? Hulk Hogan skateboards?
Yeah, like a rocket thing. And he there's like a freeze gun. Christopher Lloyd gets frozen. And it's very weird. Also, The Undertaker is in this movie.
Okay. Oh, my God. Sean, we have to at some point review bad WWE movies.
This wasn't even WWE.
That's just a regular movie.
Movies starring Hulk Hogan.
Bad movies starring wrestlers. That's what we have to start doing. That'll be a new section of the show.
If you're gonna watch bad movies with wrestlers, you gotta watch Three Ninjas when Hulk Hogan is Dave Dragon.
Why was he in movies?
What was the movie with Ziggler and Kane as a cop?
Countdown.
Oh, that
Countdown. Where Rusev is in his wrestling attire with a gun.
And the Usos were in it too, and they were dressed like themselves.
Brock Lesnar was in it.
He was.
Oh my God.
It was stock footage, but he was in it.
They use stock footage of a guy that works for them. Oh my God. All right. That does it for us here at Blah Blah Wrestling. Take care. We'll talk to you at around No Mercy time.